Welcome back, everyone, to Coffee Talk 3.0. I'm Kevin Barbaro, and you're listening now live on TalkingAlternative.com. And in a little while, we'll have our national syndication audience joining us in for the shortened, edited-down version of this, but everybody gets the full meal deal with me, supersized. I wonder, do they even do supersized at McDonald's anymore? I don't even know if they do it. After that dude did the 30 days and he almost died, it didn't work out so good. But great episode here today. We're going to talk a little bit about picking up where we left off last week on several of the stories. I'm in storytelling mode, Sam. You know what I mean? I find that a lot more fun, honestly, than having guests come in. And I don't know if that says something about my personality, that I'd rather talk about myself than talk with other people. But I just, you know, I've had such a ridiculous life, you know. It's just, I feel like I just feel the need to share that with everybody. But we were talking last week about anniversaries in February. And actually, so today we're going to pick up from that. And we're going to talk a little bit about my anniversaries that as they pertain to March, which is also my birthday. Yes. Next week is my birthday, actually the 16th. I'll turn 45. So I'm about, probably about a quarter of the way through at this stage. I do plan on living to about 200. I'm just hoping science catches up with my desires, you know. But we're going to talk about some things that have happened to me in March. We're going to talk a little bit about this is probably about the last time we'll talk about the Deadspin thing. And then we're going to talk green, red, green and picking up where we left off on my adventure from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina to Burlington, Vermont. 1,200 miles, 11 days. March. So anyway, besides my birthday, March is actually the anniversary. And actually, March 10th, so this week, is the anniversary of when I decided to become an actor. It's actually the March 10th. It isn't necessarily when I first decided to become an actor. I decided to become an actor when I was out in California hanging out with my best friend, and quite honestly, we were getting splashed drinking Irish whiskey in the Irish bar he built in his house, and that was on a whim. I said, "Yeah, I think I'm just going to be an actor," you know, because I don't know, my life is at rock bottom right now, and but March 10th was when I kind of took the first steps to doing that, and. You know, I really had no idea what to do. I think that a lot of people, when they decide to go into business, they're in the same boat. You know, they have a passion. They have an idea. They feel as though they have the means by which to make it successful, but yet they don't have necessarily the knowledge base or the connection to get things started. And so you have to just go all in. And that's what I did. You know, I basically figured that acting is a business. And you're your business, and so you've got to market yourself like you would any other business. And so I really just approached it like I did my coaching career, minus the screwing up. but, you know, it's the hard work, you know, dedication and discipline and refusing to fail. And I think that those are attributes that I think everybody, if you dug deep enough, because we all have that survival instinct, I think anybody could do it. You know, people ask me all the time how I was able to become a working actor in such a short amount of time, because obviously it's difficult. It's New York City, man, you know. But I've been able to pull it off. And so, but the one thing that I tell everyone when they ask me is I'm nothing special. There's nothing any different about me than anybody else that I know. It's just that I don't have a filter when it comes to being fearless about putting myself out there. And I think that that's the difference. I think anybody can work hard. I obviously anybody can work hard. That's not a genetic trait. It's a decision. Anybody can work hard. Anybody can put themselves in a position to be successful no matter what they do. So in that regard, I'm no different than anybody else. But the one regard I think that maybe people would have to work on that I just feel as though I just inherently do is I'm not afraid of failure. I'm not really afraid of anything, which can be good and bad. but you know, so I just put myself out there. So March 10 was when I really kind of took the steps and I reached out to there's a talent agency in Toledo, Ohio. That talent agency actually was responsible for the discovery of Katie Holmes. Katie Holmes is from Toledo, Ohio. She went to Notre Dame Academy, and this Starbound Entertainment Group, that was the talent agency that discovered her and got her career started. And I reached out to them, and it just started snowballing from there. So it's an important anniversary, you know, because 2 years later, and in those 2 years, you're talking, what, 20-something commercials and two starring roles in feature film, another supporting role in feature film. What the hell? Two co-starring roles in a theater, you know, and joining a theater group. And so, you know, I've actually done quite a bit in just 24 months, which I don't take for granted because, you know, I'm not going to mess up like I did last career. But, you know, another thing that's really interesting to me when I look back, I feel as though, you know, how everybody always says, and sometimes it can be cliche-ish that everything happens for a reason. But I really believe that. I really believe that we have conscious choice. We can decide, we can make decisions on which way to go. But I feel as though if you trust your instincts, your heart, and obviously you have to use common sense, but I think that you can put yourself in a position to be successful. And you'll find these connections later on, hindsight. You know, like with me, the fact that I landed on an acting career and the fact that I was able to, you know, when I first decided to go all in and I started commuting back and forth to New York City, living out of my car, right? I decided, I had this passion for film and everything when I was a kid and TV. And so I was immersed in it, you know, and I have always been fascinated by it. And I always kind of thought that I could do it, but yet I never knew how I would go about doing it, okay? And I was kind of guy that was always quoting movies and always mimicking actors and things like this. Not necessarily impersonating, but mimicking. And so anyway, I get to the point where I decide that I need to do theater. That's how I'm going to really learn the craft, because that's what every great actor says. You need to do theater. And a lot of the greatest actors today came from theater. I mean, Kevin Spacey was one of my favorite actors. He was Juilliard trained, you know, and it was actually an interview that I watched that he did, which led me to doing theater. So to show how things are connected, right? So I go all in and I join a theater. I audition for a theater group, okay? Love Creek Productions here in the city. And which Eileen, who was here in the studio last week, she wasn't a guest, but she was here chilling with us. Her and I co-starred in a one act with a couple other people. And that led to being asked to audition for the play Doubt, okay, by John Patrick Shanley. And Doubt was a movie with Philip Seymour Hoffman and Meryl Streep about the priest that was accused of something, of impropriety with a young boy in the parish. Happened in 1966, okay, in the Bronx. So I go in and I audition. I end up getting that role. And I've talked about this before on another episode. So I end up getting that role. Had I not been through everything that I had been through, life cumulatively, but also with the whole having to resign because I had made ethical mistakes, being accused of something that I didn't do, but it seemed believable because of my other mistakes, okay, how that's kind of, you know, it's perception, right? So all of a sudden I land this role in Doubt, which is exactly the type of role that I, as a beginning actor, could excel at, because it really, the more and more I dove into that role, the more I realized that this has a lot to do with my life. And it was honestly like therapeutic how I was able to sort through a lot of the feelings that I had of after everything that had happened, the things that we've been talking about the last couple episodes here with dispelling the rumor portion of what happened with the end of my career, right? And there were some great lines in Doubt that so I played Father Flynn, okay? Father Flynn, for those people, Reader's Digest version, Cliff Note version for those people that are listening. 1966, Catholic school, the priest. He's the first and only black student in the school, Donald Muller. And there is an old head nun, who played by Meryl Streep in the movie, with Meryl Streep, my favorite actor, period. I mean, the most so talented. And she feels as though, so what happens is the boy comes out of the rectory smelling of alcohol, and Father Flynn comes out after him. The boy had been caught drinking the wine by the groundskeeper. He called the Father Flynn. Father Flynn met with the boy in private. We don't know what happened in that meeting, okay? Next thing you know, the boy comes out of the rectory, and Father Flynn is following him. The boy smells of alcohol. The nun and the boy is taking a liking to Father Flynn, and they have a camaraderie. It's the only black child in that school ever. 1966, Bronx, okay? Irish neighborhood, Italian neighborhood, and one black kid, right? And so the kid, you know, he gets beat up a lot. You know, he's got a rough go. So the Father Flynn takes him under his wing, I see like this. There's a little of me in Father Flynn where I'm the head of the cross country track program for all those years. I have kids that need additional attention. You have kids that seek out additional attention, and the perception of how you are you put yourself in social situations, or how people perceive your interactions with that person is what really matters. The facts don't even matter to people. People don't care about the facts. People care what it looks like. Okay. And so I drew such a connection with Father Flynn as I was going through and memorizing this play. I mean, it 58-page script for somebody had never been on stage before. Man, it's a lot. And I'm telling you, my memory is not so good, dude. Not so good. But when we come back from the first commercial break here, I'll pick up where I left off, because it was really. It ties in really with a lot what we've been talking about here with the Deadspin article and the end of my coaching career and the perception of what had happened versus the reality. So we'll be back in just a minute, and I'll pick up from where I left off. I'm Kevin Barbro. You're listening to Coffee Talk 3.0 on TalkingAlternative.com. You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network. Are you tired of gyms and fitness centers that offer only the same boring, mundane options? Are you looking for a new and exciting way to burn fat, gain strength, and improve your flexibility? Then ilovekickboxing.com is the place for you. My name is Kevin Barbro, and I'm the host of the nationally syndicated radio show Coffee Talk 3.0, and I joined I Love Kickboxing 10 months ago, and it was the best decision I've ever made. In that time, I've lost 30 pounds, I've gained strength and flexibility, and the confidence that I need to move forward in my acting career. I'm nearly 45 years old, and I'm in the best shape of my life thanks to ilovekickboxing.com. Go to ilovekickboxing.com and find the location nearest you. Use the promo code COFFEE and receive 20% off the already low introductory price of $19.99. That's 3 visits and a pair of gloves. It's 1 hour of your day. It'll change your life forever. Believe me, trust me, I do it myself. ilovekickboxing.com. Welcome back, everyone, to Coffee Talk 3.0. You're listening to on TalkingAlternative.com and also Talk Radio Network on AM and FM stations around the country. And we're talking about the connections that I have between real life and fantasy world, which is my acting career, and how it's actually helped me and how everything kind of happens for a reason. And so my first real big acting gig was co-starring in one of the lead characters in an off-Broadway production of the play Doubt. I played Father Flynn, and he was accused of improprieties. He had put himself in a position where something looked questionable, the perception of it was not so good, and then you have to decide whether or not he did it. You know, that was the thing about the play, is that you never really know. And so when you leave the theater, you have to decide for yourself, did he or didn't he do it? And so that was kind of like the same thing with my end of my coaching career and, you know, having to resign because I had been unethical in the early stages of my career. What I didn't like was the being lied about after the fact. And so in any event, with Father Flynn, there's a great line in there. When he's in the climax of the play, where he's in the face-to-face confrontation with Sister Aloysius, and he says to her that, "You don't understand. There's things that I can't say. And even though you may feel certainty in what you think has happened, it's only a thought. It's not fact. And you have to realize that there are things beyond your knowledge." And that was kind of exactly what was going on when the whole Deadspin article came out. And I didn't say anything. And the reason why I didn't say anything was because I was, obviously, there's not a whole lot you can say, A of all. B of all, legally, I can't say anything because it needed to sort itself out from a legal standpoint anyway, which ultimately was in my favor. I'm clear to the whole thing. But the other thing was, I wasn't going, in order for me to completely, and even now today, okay, even though I've been going through and talking about the whole article, for me to 100% explain to everybody what exactly happened, I would have to throw a couple of people under the bus. But and for what? All right, my life is fine. My life is great. My life is actually better than it was, honestly. So there's no real. I'm not going to do that. Okay, and even when I was going through it at the time, I said, listen, confidentially, because I needed to clear my name with the human resources, right? So I, knowing that it wasn't going to go any further than that conversation, I had to lay everything out, okay? But I even did it when I did do that and laid it all out so that everybody knew exactly what we were dealing with here, I made the comment, if anybody ever asks me about some of the things that I said in here, I swear on my life, I'm going to take it to the grave. I'm not going to say a word, okay? Because I'm going to take on the damage. I'm the one that screwed up. Let me handle the punishment. I'm a big boy. I'll handle it eventually, okay? I mean, it was tough. You know, anytime you go through something like that, it was tough. But I wanted the damage to end with me, okay? If I were to lay everything out, even right now, it could hurt people's lives, you know, and it'd be embarrassing for them, and I'm not going to do it, man. You know, it's not worth it. Even though those people aren't even people that I would consider to be a friend anymore, they're people that are inconsequential in my life. But they used to be my friend, and my loyalty is unshakable, man. Even after I feel as though I've been betrayed by somebody, you know what? It's on you. You know, nothing I can say now is going to change what happened anyway. So why throw somebody under the bus? You know what I mean? So it was really, you know, I was able to really dive into that role. And then, of course, I was able to really dive into my role in 12 Angry Men, where I played the antagonist, the racist juror who was trying to swing everybody. And it wasn't so much that I could relate to that guy, but I could relate to the play itself in the fact that it, too, was a play about perception. completely, 100% about perception, and that and realizing that the perception of what had happened with the young boy and his father being killed had maybe nothing to do with the reality, and that was why he was, you know, not guilty in the end. So you know, March is huge, man, for me, because it's really that, and I learned so much by doing theater, and that's what's helped me so much going forward with all the movies and the commercials and everything else that I've done, because I learned to how to connect with the roles and how to immerse myself in these roles and find the connection with the things that have happened in my life to create a better character and to kind of become those people, you know. And so March is good, man. Birthday, I got that. Yeah, but one other thing that's kind of funny, and just kind of goes along with like my life. All right, another anniversary, or actually a milestone for me, is that I'm now 18 months removed from a ridiculous string of traffic tickets that I had received in Nassau County. You know, in New York State, you know, they have the point system. Okay. And if you get over a certain number of points within 18 months, if you get over 6 points in 18 months, then your license is automatically suspended, okay? And it's I think it's suspended for 6 months or something like this, and you have to pay like this ridiculous fine to get it back, right? So my extra – all actors, when they come here, you know, you got to get an extra job, and – I was searching for a while at first for the extra job, and I was working with the animal rescue, and that was like, you know, wasn't paying me much, but it was money, you know. And so anyway, I got a job working for S&G Limousine, who's one of the sponsors of the show here. But I had never driven for a limo service before, and I'd never even been to Long Island. Before I went to work for S&G Limousine, I literally never been to, but Long Island is not, it's not on the way to anything. You know, it's like Michigan. You know, you have no reason to go to Michigan unless you're going to Michigan, because it's not on the way to anything, right? So same thing with Long Island. Why go there if you don't have to go there? Which now, P.S., I live on Long Island. I love Long Island, okay? But so anyway, I get this job driving for the limo service. I haven't driven for 2 weeks, Sam, all right? I hadn't even been driving for 2 weeks, okay? I'm still trying to figure out how to get to LaGuardia, even to this day. Dude, LaGuardia, man, right? Joe Biden wasn't far off when he called it the third world country, because it's about one notch above that. The only thing that keeps it from being a third world country is the fact that there's running water and electricity, usually, right? So anyway, I'm still trying to, you know, find my way around. So anyway, I made this conscious decision when I first started driving for the limo service. I'm not going to take the LIE, the Long Island Expressway, I-495 here on Long Island. In Long Island, for those people around the country, there's parkways and then there's the interstate. Now, on a parkway, and I don't know what it's like in other states. I know New Jersey's the same way. But if you're on a parkway, it's no commercial vehicles are allowed. If you're on an interstate or a thruway or a turnpike, then there's commercial traffic. But parkways are specific only to cars. No commercial vehicles. Even a commercial van's not allowed on there. A U-Haul van, nothing. So I decided, well, the parkways get me everywhere that the LIE gets me, so I'm just going to take the parkways. And the only time I'm going to take the LIE is if I'm going to Manhattan, because that's how you get to the tunnel, Midtown Tunnel, Queens Midtown Tunnel. So I pick up this lady, right? So I've been taking the parkways, trying to figure it out, right? It's 6 o'clock in the morning, and I pick up this lady, and she's running late. And not because of me, but she made the reservation too close to her departure time. And at 6 a.m. on Long Island, the only people in this entire syndication network that are listening right now that can relate to the traffic here are the people that are listening in Riverside, California, LA area. Okay. We're on the air out there. Okay. They can relate. No one else can relate to what we've got to deal with in terms of traffic. So anyway, if you're not on the highway before 6 a.m., you are stuck in traffic 100%. So at 6 a.m., it's raining. I pick this lady up. We got to go to LaGuardia, and it's about 15 miles, which also means about, you know, an hour. Right at that hour, 15 miles an hour. So She's like, can you really take the LIE so we can take the HOV lane? I was like, okay, yeah, that's fine. You know, didn't want to do it, but I'm like, whatever. So I pull on. It's raining. It's dark out. And I signal. I move over. Signal. I move over. It's four lanes each way. Signal. I move over. I look, and there's the HOV lane. And I'm like, and I look behind me. Nobody. The coast is clear. I'm like, great. Signal. Move into it. Dude, I'm not in the HOV lane more than 20 seconds. All of a sudden, I see police lights behind me. And I'm like, well, that can't be for me. Sure enough, it's for me. Who else would it be for? Because I'm the only one in this lane, right? So, signal, move over, signal, move over, signal, move over to the side of the road. Police officer comes over. And I thought that he was pulling me over to make sure that I had more than one person in the vehicle, okay? And license, registration, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. He doesn't say why he pulled me over. And he doesn't ask me, do you know why I pulled you over? Okay? Because usually they ask that, right? I said, do you mind me asking why it is that you pulled me over? And he said, yeah, you entered the HOV lane illegally. And I was like, illegally? And I'm thinking to myself, I signaled, you know what I mean? And I said, what do you mean I entered it illegally? And he says, well, you crossed over the solid line. And I was like, oh. I said, well, you're not allowed to do that. And he goes, what do you mean you're not allowed? He's like, of course you're not allowed to do that. And I said, well, I didn't know that. And he said, well, you drive for a limo service, right? And I'm like, yeah, but this is literally, I've been driving for like, I don't know, 2 weeks. And this is the first time I've ever even been on Long Island Expressway in my life because I'm not from here. And he said, I said, well, how was I supposed to know that? And he said, well, everybody just knows that. And I said, well, I beg to differ because I don't know that, right? And I said, you know, there was no sign when I was pulling onto the interstate telling me that I shouldn't do that. I never took a test telling me that I shouldn't do that. There's no sign while I'm on it that I'm not supposed to do that. How would I know to do that? So I'm going to come back in a moment and tell you exactly how he treated me after this entire conversation in just a minute. With most airlines, the most affordable flights are early morning departures. Getting to the airport at that hour can be problematic or even dangerous. I'm Kevin Barbro, the host of Coffee Talk 3.0. And listen, don't make your Uncle Ned wake up at 3 a.m. so he can get you to the airport on time and not pay for parking. Call S&G Limo at 516-771-LIMO and have affordable, courteous, safe transportation right to your terminal. S&G Limo has branches and affiliates all over the country and can arrange 24/7 service to all major airports by calling 516-771-LIMO. You can save time and money. And on your return, S&G Limousine will be there patiently waiting for you on your arrival. No more standing in line for a cab. They'll pick you up at curbside and get you home safely. That's S&G Limo, 516-771-LIMO, 516-771-LIMO, or go to coffeetalkradio.com.
Hi, I'm Joan London. When I needed to find senior care for my mom, I really struggled to find the right fit until I found an advisor, someone who had been through this before. That's why I recommend A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service. They have experts who will help you ask the right questions and find the right place. Call A Place for Mom today.
To speak with a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 1-800-274-6144. That's 1-800-274-6144.
A Place for Mom has helped over 200,000 families find the right senior care for their parents, from assisted living to independent living, even Alzheimer's care, and have local advisors that can help explain your options at no cost to you.
To speak with a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 1-800-274-6144. That's 1-800-274-6144.
Call today.
Welcome back, everyone, to Coffee Talk 3.0. I'm Kevin Barbaro, and you're listening on talk radio network stations around the country, and we're broadcasting from the flagship studios here at TalkingAlternative.com. And we're talking about the month of March and my little anniversaries here and how my life has evolved as an actor here in New York City, but we're actually talking about my interaction with the Nassau County Police Department, okay? So I'm on the LIE, right? Get pulled over. I was in the HOV lane. He says, so the police officer says, you know, you crossed it illegally. And I said, I beg to differ. I don't know that. How am I supposed to know that? And so so then we have this interaction. He said, well, you know, everybody just knows that. And so I proceeded to tell him, like, listen, I'm not trying to be difficult, but if there's no sign at the entranceway to the interstate, there's no sign while you're on it, which there is a sign, but I hadn't reached it yet, saying to enter and exit in the specific spots. How would I know that? And he said, well, you know, I thought that line only was there to designate it as an HOV lane, not that there was a deeper meaning to it, that you're not allowed to cross over that line until a certain spot. But because in some states, in some places, the HOV lane, like in Charlotte, the HOV lane is actually separate from the highway. In Atlanta, there's an HOV lane, and it's divided by pylons. Okay, so I thought that maybe the solid line just was there to designate, hey, this is an HOV lane, not that you were not allowed to cross into it at one time or another. So he said, well, you know, you're not supposed to cross over. It's a solid line, okay, which we were talking about in the break. And I said, well, if I'm not supposed to cross over it, why isn't it yellow? You know, if I'm not allowed to cross over, why isn't it a solid yellow line and not a white line? And he said, well, it's because all the traffic is moving in the same direction. That's why it's a white line. There are no yellow lines out here. And I said, well, I beg to differ again. Because if you look right over by the breakdown lane, that is a yellow line. And so why is that line yellow and this line is white if I'm not allowed to cross the white line, right? So anyway, he goes back to the car. He comes back and he gives me two tickets. my argument fell on deaf ears. And so I received a ticket for the crossing into the lane illegally. And he gave me one for not signaling, but I knew that I had signaled, okay? So I don't know what it's like in other places when you go to fight a ticket. And Nassau County is like a different place, man. You go there, it's in Hempstead, and you got to get there early, man. It's like waiting in line for tickets for a concert. You got to get there early. There's a line of people. Everyone hates everyone, right? No one is happy. And there's a judge there, but really what they have are the county prosecutor people there, and all they're trying to do is cut a deal. You know, if you show up to fight the ticket, they're going to cut a deal with you. Without 100%, they're going to cut a deal because they don't want to go through the whole process. And so I argue with the guy, right? I give him my whole spiel, the same spiel I gave the police officer. He looked at me like I had three heads, and he's like, so what are you trying to say? And I'm like, well, I'm trying to say that, you know, maybe I'd like to get in front of the judge and see what he thinks about it. He said, listen, man. You're not going to get very far because all the judge is going to say, the ignorance of the law is not an excuse anyway. So you can go through this whole spiel. And the guy said, I'm going to be honest with you too. It sounds pretty logical, but it's not going to win you the case. So he's like, you're better off. He said, well, what about the turn signal? I said, listen, man, I know 100% that I use my turn signal. And he said, okay, so let's do this. Let's just throw out the turn signal. Okay. And just eat it on using the lane, and now you know better, right? So I ended up, that's what I ended up doing. So, dude, it was like $225 per ticket, right? So I had to still pay the ticket for the turn signal. They just didn't give me the points for it, okay? So I ended up paying like $450 or something like this for that one time. And so I didn't get the points, so I had 2 points. But then I subsequently, I've been pulled over a couple other times. And so I was rocking 6 points, but I'm now free. I'm free. I'm 18 months in, man. I'm free. I can start accumulating more points now so I can go back to speeding. It's my life, man, you know. Anyway, so that's kind of like where I'm at in terms of March. But you know, I wanted to kind of wrap up, and I already kind of did a little bit. You know, I wanted to wrap up a little bit about the whole Dedsman thing because, you know, I don't want this to drag on forever. But I felt, you know, after a couple years, I needed to address it. I think that I deserved the ability to address it, And you should address it, because otherwise then you're just accepting that everything as the truth. And so, you know, I've already laid out about how the inaccuracies and how I was completely just thrown under the bus on more than what I had done wrong, you know what I mean? And that it wasn't fair. And, you know, see, I have a friend that's going through this right now. Okay, not the Desmond thing, but I have two close friends that have resigned mid-year, just in the last month, okay? I'm not going to say their names nor their sports, but, you know, these are people that I've known for a long time, okay? It's tough, man. You know, anytime you go through something like that, and of course there's going to be media involved because you are a coach at a university. And then there's always going to be speculation after that. And one thing that I did realize in all of this is that you can't, it's tough not to, but you can't obsess about what people are going to say about you. Because there's always going to be people that sit back anonymously from the cheap seats and just throw daggers because, you know, you wronged them in some way, somewhere in a past life, you know, or it was a former athlete that you had that you kicked off the team and they're going to come back anonymously and say things about you on the internet or whatever. That's always going to happen. You know, I've known some of the nicest coaches in the world that still get ripped apart on message boards, you know, because people love taking pot shots at people. You know what I mean? It's a terrible thing about the human race. You know, we can be so caring towards each other, but we can be so damaging and hurtful to each other at the same time. And what ends up happening is that people lose sight of the fact. See, when one of my friends resigned, I had tweeted something along the lines of, I can't remember what exactly my tweet was, but I tweeted something along the lines of, when it's all said and done, let's remember that we're talking about human beings and families. These people have families. These people have kids, you know. And so when you're going on, and the media, particularly new media, like the Deadspin and these types of websites, they don't care about that. They don't care about how it is going to affect somebody's life, and not just their life, but their kids' lives. You know, when I was going through all this, I never mentioned the names of, you know, because I had dated two of my runners. Okay, I never mentioned their names ever. I would never mention their name. They're grown adults, okay, and we, you know, and they were adults when we dated. You know what I mean? But I would never mention their name because I wouldn't want their kids one day to be on the internet and Google their mom's name and find some ridiculous article that somebody had written about them, you know, anonymously. And so, I would never do that. And you know, I was going through all of that when the article came out. I can empathize with my friends that are going through this now. I know what that feels like, okay? And there are a lot of people listening right now. Everybody's gone through something, man. Everybody's gone through, whether it's a breakup or a divorce or, you know, something happens with your job or say you get arrested, you know? So say you made a mistake. Say you did something dumb, you know what I mean? A lot of people do dumb stuff, you know? And it becomes public. It becomes a matter of public record or it's in the newspaper or whatever. I know what that feels like. You know, when I was in Penn Station, man, and, you know, my friends, they're always just like, oh, my God, I can't believe you handled everything so well. On the outside, I handled it pretty good, man, you know. And I can look back now, and it's just a footnote in my life, and I can laugh about it. One secret to everything is being able to laugh at yourself for your mistakes, man. But at the time, when I read that article, okay, and I couldn't even read the whole thing because I was so emotional about it, right? Now, being 100% honest, man, I could never kill myself. I could never commit suicide. It's not within me to do that. But I can tell you, I know what that feels like to be rock bottom. When I was sitting in Penn Station, okay, on the floor, it was just me, in my backpack. I didn't even have a ticket yet for my train that I was waiting for that day when I read that article on February 12th, 2013, 3:30 in the morning. I didn't have a ticket yet. I'd lost my ATM card, okay? So I had to wait. I only had cash. The windows don't open until like 6 o'clock in the morning. It's 3:30 in the morning. I have to wait 2.5 hours on the floor in Penn Station, just me and homeless people, right? So you're kind of, you know, you're feeling it, you know, and you're feeling like, where's my life kind of ended up? And I read the article, and it was like my heart just sank, and it was like you become kind of loopy, you know what I mean? You're like in a daze. Yeah, it was almost like I was outside of myself, looking at myself. Do you know what I'm saying? It's so hard for me on the spot here on the radio to put it into words exactly how I felt. But what I can say is, I could see that line in front of me. I could see that line right in front of me where the average person might think that it's not worth it. Do you know what I mean? And I can see where somebody would justify thinking that it's the only way out. Now, I could never do it. And I hope anybody that's ever in that position knows that it's going to get better, because it did get better for me. You know what I'm saying? I wouldn't have crossed that line, but I could see that line. And when those people said those things about me that weren't true, and when they wrote that article about me, they didn't care about that. You know what I mean? And that says something about their character. And that says something about the integrity of obviously there's no integrity when it comes to that kind of media, you know what I mean? And so I, you know, anybody that's ever been through it, I know what that feels like, man. But dude, let me tell you something, man, it all gets better, baby, right? And you'll be able to laugh at it eventually, but it's tough, man, and I don't wish it on anybody. Listen, we're going to be back for the final segment here of Coffee Talk 3.0 in just a minute. You're listening on Talk Radio Network and TalkingAlternative.com. Are you tired of gyms and fitness centers that offer only the same boring, mundane options? Are you looking for a new and exciting way to burn fat, gain strength, and improve your flexibility? Then ILoveKickboxing.com is the place for you. My name is Kevin Barbaro, and I'm the host of the nationally syndicated radio show Coffee Talk 3.0, and I joined I Love Kickboxing 10 months ago, and it was the best decision I've ever made. In that time, I've lost 30 pounds, I've gained strength and flexibility, and the confidence that I need to move forward in my acting career. I'm nearly 45 years old, and I'm in the best shape of my life thanks to ILoveKickboxing.com. Go to ILoveKickboxing.com and find the location nearest you. Use the promo code COFFEE and receive 20% off the already low introductory price of $19.99. That's 3 visits and a pair of gloves. It's 1 hour of your day. It'll change your life forever. Believe me, trust me, I do it myself. ILoveKickboxing.com. With most airlines, the most affordable flights are early morning departures. Getting to the airport at that hour can be problematic or even dangerous. I'm Kevin Barbaro, the host of Coffee Talk 3.0. And listen, don't make your Uncle Ned wake up at 3 a.m. so he can get you to the airport on time and not pay for parking. Call S&G Limo at 516-771-LIMO and have affordable, courteous, safe transportation right to your terminal. S&G Limo has branches and affiliates all over the country and can arrange 24/7 service to all major airports. By calling 516-771-LIMO, you can save time and money. And on your return, S&G Limousine will be there patiently waiting for you on your arrival. No more standing in line for a cab. They'll pick you up at curbside and get you home safely. That's S&G Limo, 516-771-LIMO. 516-771-LIMO, or go to coffeetalkradio.com. Welcome back, everyone, to Coffee Talk 3.0. I'm Kevin Barbaro, and you're listening on Talk Radio Network stations around the country. You can check out the podcast or the extended version of this show by going to coffeetalkradio.com. And while you're there, obviously, stop by, check out our different sponsors and their banner ads. And also, you can check out coffeetalkradio.tv, which I have my show is the host and the platform for some independent artists around the country and their web series or their short films and things like this. Highly entertaining. We just had a new one that we put up there. It's a short film called John Dablofsky TV reality stars by a guy named Gerard Zara. And we're going to actually have him as a guest on the show here in a couple of weeks to talk about it. I'm an independent artist, basically. And so my goal is to be the only syndicated show in the country that highlights and is a platform for other independent artists as they can piggyback on the syndication network. So make sure you check all those things out. Now, week to week, we have the podcast and a broadcast. Now, this is an ongoing story, basically, like a podcast would be. Not quite to the level of Serial, right? But it follows a story or an adventure that I've been on in my life as it's outlined in my upcoming biography, Green, Red, Green. And this particular story that we've been telling over the last few weeks, and you can go back to the archives and listen to the previous episodes of it, is a bike ride that I had done. I had cycled by myself from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina to Burlington, Vermont, 1,200 miles. It took me 11 days to do it. And picking up from where we left off yesterday was that I had slept in these people's garage that owned a convenience store along Highway 1, I believe it was, as you're going through North Carolina. You know, you can't ride a bike on an interstate. You can't ride a bike on a restricted highway. You have to take basically two or sometimes four-lane roads. It's dangerous. You know what I mean? I mean, the one thing about my ride was, you know, I'm basically at a lot of places, there is no shoulder. And so you're literally just biking along and you're just hoping that the cars go around you. Now, I was never in any situation where I felt that my life was in any kind of danger from other vehicles, right? But I did. One thing was, I want to say, okay, before I pick up from like the spot where I left off last time, a couple of interesting things happened early on in the ride that I thought this is going to be a long ride, right? So I had two flat tires the first day. Now, doing the math, I was like, man, I'm gonna go through like 10 tires here, man. And so that was ridiculous, you know. And, you know, changing a tire, you know, it's not easy changing a bike tire, okay? It's a process. Let me put it that way. So the very first day, I get two flat tires, and I'm chased by a dog, okay? I mean, this is all the first day, dude, you know? Then it's like I don't have anywhere to sleep. I sleep under my underwear on a picnic table, and then people see me when I woke up in the morning, and that whole episode, and craving milk. Yeah, I was craving Strawberry Quick all the time, dude. I don't even drink milk, and I was craving it, you know? But the other thing was I lost my helmet on day two. Yeah, I went into, like, this pharmacy. It was one of the things. I was craving the milk. I don't know if it was because of the protein in it. I don't know if it was because of the fat in it. Or it was the sugar from the strawberry, you know, flavoring or whatever. But I was craving it, man. And so I went into this little convenience store. I come back out. Freaking helmet's gone, man. Somebody stole my helmet. Day two. So I rode the rest of the ride with no helmet. Dude, I went 9 days and about 900 miles, man, with no helmet. Just a baseball cap. Yeah, that was kind of dangerous. I don't recommend that. But anyway, particularly as I was going through the Poconos, okay? When I was going through the Poconos, I had gotten my bike up to about 60 miles an hour going downhill and no helmet. Yeah. It starts shaking, bro. It starts shaking. So anyway, picking up from where I was last week, so I sleep. I go 196 miles the next day, 196 miles to get to Williamsburg, Virginia, so I could check into this hotel. When I get there, it was one of those things where, like, I call the hotel. I say, hey, how do I get to your hotel? This is pre-GPS and everything else. She gives me directions as if I was in a car. But I was on a bike, and so these directions took me, like, way out of the way. When I get to the hotel, I realized that the hotel was right. You know, it's like you can see the point at which I called right down the road. And they sent me this long way because they thought I was on a motorcycle, not a bike, you know. And so I was at, like, 190 miles. I was like 6 miles out of my way or something like this. And so I was upset because it's like, dude, I mean, as if I hadn't ridden far enough as it is. So I get to the hotel, I check in, I eat an entire box of donuts, glazed donuts, entire box of 6 glazed donuts, and I fill up the ice tub. I haven't taken a shower since I left. Okay, I hadn't taken a shower since I left. I fill up the ice tub, the bathtub with ice and water, and I laid down in it, and that was so comfortable, Sam. I'm telling you, man. Like, I slept. I didn't fall asleep in it. I slept like a baby. But my body just needed it, man. I was aching, right? It was a long way, you know, 3 days and about 490 to 500 miles in 3 days. So anyway, so then I started, actually things started getting easier after that point. You know, the sense of accomplishment that I had for going 196 miles in 1 day, it just kind of got to the point where, like, you know, I would see, you know, I would pass road signs, you know, and it would say, like, you know, like, for instance, Williamsburg. You'll say Williamsburg, 110 miles. Okay. Williamsburg, 90 miles. Okay. You know, it was like I had just gotten so calloused to the discomfort that I was feeling that I realized that, like, yeah, it's not going to get any better, but I really pretty much feel about as bad as I can, so it's not going to get any worse, you know. And so, but there was like little things along the ride that were just like ridiculous. Like, first of all, it was brutally hot. I mean, it was literally brutally hot. And because it was August, note to self in the future, if I ever do something, you know, don't do it in August, right? So, but there were some interesting things. Like, one thing was that I actually passed the sun. And so what I mean by that is as I was riding, right? So, it's summertime, okay? And so, like, basically what was happening is I started in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and so, like, the sun was, like, it would rise and set kind of a little bit in front of me. You know what I mean? So it would go east to west, but as I was traveling north, it was a little bit in front of me. So I went so far on the globe that I actually passed the sun. So the sun, at one point then, was just rising and setting above me, and then it was rising and setting below, behind me, you know? And so that was incredibly, but the other thing was, dude, I'm telling you, I swear on my life, no matter what direction I was biking, I was in the headwind. I spent 11 days. I spent 11 days in headwind, man. It was so, there was one point, I can't remember where I was. I think it was like in Virginia or, I'll tell you where it was. I was in Amish country. Okay, so I was going through, I was in southeastern Pennsylvania. I was kind of cutting through in southeastern Pennsylvania, heading to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, capital of Pennsylvania, right? And so I'm traveling, and it's a brutal headwind. I'm going downhill, and I'm pedaling because it's such a headwind. And the road turns to the right. On my life, I turn, still headwind. I was so upset. I got off my bike. I took my bike and I threw it into this corn, right? And I was just cursing God himself. I'm like, you know, it's like this guy in the middle of this field. I'm like, damn you all to hell, right? It's like Planet of the Apes. And I couldn't take it, man. I was just, I literally snapped, man. And it was just ridiculous. I no matter what direction I went. And dude, there were some times where I was so hungry. This is so ridiculous, but sometimes I was so hungry, I would stop, I'd walk over to a cornfield, and I would rip off a piece of corn, and I would just eat corn, raw corn right off the cob, man. I mean, I was just, I don't know what was going through my mind this whole time. And, you know, this whole time, it's like, you know, I'm trying to find myself, and like half the time, I'm just loose, you know, I'm just, my head is just, I'm just loose, you know, I don't know if I'm coming or going. And you know what, like, one little thing about this whole thing, you know, one reason, you know, I did this because I was trying to come to grips with my niece passing and midlife crisis and everything else. Yeah, you know, one really ridiculous reason why I did this, I don't even know how many times I've even admitted to this, but I did it to impress a girl. I had this ex-girlfriend for like years before that. And I thought that it would be like impressive if I did this, you know? That's how dudes work, you know what I mean? That's how ridiculous my life is. So anyway, I'll pick up and finish up the story about my bike ride to Vermont next week. And join us back here on Talk Radio Network stations around the country. And make sure you check out the podcast for the extended version of this, coffeetalkradio.com. I'm Kevin Barbara. We'll check you next week on Coffee Talk 3.0.